This week, we return to a concept often complained about in small circles, whether it be at the local lodge level or at some grander scale. This week, we're talking with the author of the recent piece, The Real Problem with Progressive Lines, Worshipful Brother and past Education Chair for the State of Illinois, Scott S. Duvall. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 584. I want to thank our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. Without you, we cannot make this show happen week after week, month after month, year after year. Since July of 2011, the Whence Came You podcast has been creating weekly Masonic education for anyone interested in Freemasonry and, of course, its kindred sciences. No small endeavor, requiring hours of work each week on top of what we all have, work, kids, spouses. We've got three ways to give: PayPal, subscription-based, Patreon, PayPal single gifts, and both Patreon and PayPal subscriptions have the same tiers. I invite you to join us in producing the WCY podcast. In the last 10 years, Masonic education has come a long way. Coincidence? Let's keep this ship on course. And thank you for your decision to join us. If you want to learn more, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. A couple of episodes ago, I read a piece when Worshipful Brother Scott Duvall, past Education Chair of the State of Illinois, decided to dust off his pen, or rather his keyboard, and type up something he'd been thinking about recently and came out of a somewhat Masonic writer's retirement. This emeritus contributor, Scott S. Duvall, brought forth interesting concepts related to the progressive line, whether at the lodge level or even at the Grand Lodge level, or perhaps within your appendant bodies. What Scott talked about in his article was not what you might think. In fact, it was something else. If you missed that episode, you can check out episode number 582, The Progressive Lines, The Hidden Killer. In it, we read Scott's piece in full. This week, in what would become just half of the conversation, we talk with the author himself, Scott Duvall, in an exclusive interview right here, right now. All right, everybody, we're back, and we've got Worshipful Brother Scott Duvall, an accomplished author, Masonic speaker extraordinaire, past education chair of the Grand Lodge of Illinois for a couple of years, did some amazing things and really set us on a new path that certainly has been appreciated by the constituency here in Illinois. We started doing more than just passing papers down the line. Scott, you did a great job. Obviously, thanks for all you did there. But welcome to the show, and thanks for making some time for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So one of the main reasons that I wanted to get you on was you recently picked up the quote-unquote pen, and you put a piece together that was published on the Midnight Freemasons. Now, you had been moved into emeritus status as far as the contributors go, same as myself, which just means we have taken a back step and allowed others to continue to publish and get the new guys in there to write stuff. And we've said what we've had to say a lot of the time, and sometimes we wait until there's something extraordinary that has taken a hold of our minds, maybe, to say something. And certainly what you brought up in your most recent article was pretty extraordinary. You wrote The Real Problem with Progressive Lines, which we read on the show a couple of episodes ago. Got a lot of great feedback about it. But I'm not going to read, if anybody wants to read it, you know, it'll be in the show notes. Check it out. But what I really want to do here is, Scott has an interesting way of writing, and I feel like unpacking it a little bit and pulling some of these threads is really going to be beneficial for a lot of folks, myself included. So, Scott, tell us a little bit about why you decided to put finger to keyboard once more here.
Yeah, I mean, I first want to start by saying your description is absolutely how I viewed it, and that if I have a reflection, you know, sometimes that'll go in a journal, and maybe it sticks with me for a couple of days, and then I feel like, yeah, I should probably expand on this in a paper and see where it goes. And I would say 90% of the time, you know, the beauty of being able to step back and sit as an emeritus author, the beauty is I could just throw a lot of the stuff that doesn't really cut it in the trash. But this was one that I just kept coming back to, and I felt it was really critical to talk to on a larger scale, because I felt like I was running into, and not dead ends in the sense that like guys were intentionally blocking, but really we got to be thinking about this more often so that we can start to evolve. And that the idea or the premise here is just making your time purposeful when you're in any of the Masonic organizations. And I think definitely where I'm at now, I'm involved and I've been able to be selective about the roles and activity that I take on. And I also feel like I've learned a lot in my professional life that is valuable to Masonry. And so, you know, as I looked at the way that we've approached the progressive line and getting into any sort of officer's line for any of the organizations, I thought, man, that's just not how it would work in your employment. Like I wouldn't get paid for 10 or 15 years to just sit and wait and agree with my bosses all the way up and then one day get the big job. And that kind of seems like how we're doing it in Masonry.
I'm going to stop you right there and say, it's not kind of how it seems in Masonry. That is, when you put it in this light, it seems inflammatory, but that is exactly how it works. I have heard several times that once you enter the grand line, let's say here in Illinois, which I think is like 14 years or something, can't remember, we are told, what's your big mission? It's like, what do you mean, what's my big mission? If you go in and you interview for like junior grand deacon, they ask you what your big mission is, and then hopefully by the time you reach the top, you're just supporting everybody's thing, and they're hopefully paving a way for you to be able to bring your one thing to the mixes or whatever. But that's not how Fortune 500 companies work. That's not how Fortune 50 companies work. Nobody with any measurable amount of success in today's world who impacts societies and cultures operates that way. It feels like the excuse is that business is often seen as a dog eat dog, right? And you can't do that in Masonry. So we default back to this kind of whatever Joe Bob wants to do at the top, and I'm just going to be silent and move through the chairs and actually have no expectation on me other than to support the pillar of the master.
Yeah, and I think you touched on a lot of things. The first thing is the inflammatory nature of some of the things that I'm saying. And so that's why I've tried to be very careful not to be critical, but really kind of point out that this is how it's working. This is not a normal organizational process in the rest of the world, whether you're for-profit or nonprofit. I don't believe this would be a successful approach. And quite frankly, you point out that we see business as this dog-eat-dog and herd. Whenever you try to bring in business principles or business concepts into a lodge or any other organization, people will go, "This, it's not a business." I hear this at churches as well. But the reality is, we are losing membership. And if we don't have enough members to pay the bills, then we are going to go away. And so unfortunately, like we could stand here and say it's not dog eat dog, but we're getting eaten. And we're getting eaten at an alarming rate for an organization that's been around for a minimum of 300 years and had extreme success at one point. So I think it's time, and this is where we need to start to push, and this is where a lot of my reflection goes to like building that cohesive strategy. That's what's necessary for us to stay alive. Just sitting by and saying this isn't a business, that's not going to be the solution. And so some of where this reflection kind of came out of is that I look around at a lot of Masonic organizations and I feel like we reduce ourselves to either a charity or a degree mill. And we really don't do enough of the bigger picture stuff that's really going to pull membership in. And so these are things that are strategic ideas. And so, you know, if I layer that over to the Fortune 500 example, You have a board who reviews the strategy that is set up by the C-suite executives, and those strategies are everyone's marching orders. And if I bring a project to my bosses, they're going to review it in light of the greater business strategy. And if it doesn't meet those needs, we aren't going to do it. And I can't get upset or hurt by that. It's just, it makes it very simple to choose what moves forward and what doesn't. And it helps us stay focused. And right now, you know, over a number of years, I've struggled to figure out what that focus is. And that's kind of what brought this paper on. You know, when I interviewed for some of the roles I'm in now, I said, and this is in the Masonic space I'm speaking, I interviewed for some positions and said, I want to understand what your vision is, what role you think this organization plays in the Masonic world. And I could ask any number of six different leaders in that organization and I would get different answers. Again, that's not a criticism, but it's something that we need to develop. And it's very hard coming in at the bottom of that structure to push a strategy up. And so this is where, you know, writing the paper, getting that in front of other people, trying to show that there is a broader vision, and I need you guys to start to recognize we aren't here to just do degrees. We're here to save Masonry.
Powerful words for sure. Some of what you touched on really is clarifying where you come from on a point with this. I mean, there's a passion. Something that you did say in the piece, you tend to agree with the criticisms against the progressive line, but you also said, though I also see some advantages to the progressive line. If there are any advantages, I think I have a few that I could think of, but what are these possible advantages to a progressive line that might be the pros as opposed to the cons that we've been talking about?
I've said this for a long time because I know that the TO movement really looked at the progressive line as being a failure. Well, one of the problems with the progressive line, or one of the advantages, because that's what we're talking about, advantages, is that it does offer this opportunity to develop a cohesive vision. You know, at my work, I am at one level of the totem pole and I keep to step. And as I step up, I learn and understand and become ingrained in that strategy better, and understand what the purpose of my business is. That should be what we're doing in lodges in a progressive line. When you come in, if you start as a steward or a Tyler or Marshall, wherever your lines start, that's your first opportunity to start to understand what's the nature of your lodge? What type of guys are joining your lodge? That's influenced by a lot of factors. What are those guys looking for when they join the lodge? How is your lodge financed? How are the checks and balances functioning? And really starting to understand how the whole organization functions. And that way, when you get to the top, you don't make or you probably limit the number of errors you're making because you've been given an opportunity to really understand what the organization is. I think when you don't have a progressive line, one of the dangers is no one around you in the lodge knows who the next guy is going to be. They have no way of preparing that next guy. So it's kind of, you have to prepare for everybody. And that person that comes in can potentially have insufficient experience. And quite honestly, this is kind of a risk that we see when Grand Lodges say, well, if you don't like our progressive line at the Grand Lodge level, you can just elect somebody from the floor. Well, the danger there is you might elect somebody who is very ill-prepared. And quite honestly, I think that would be the case in a lot of Grand Lodges. Like, I don't support that. I would not be on board with pulling somebody from the floor for our Grand Lodge, because I think you run into a risk of that person getting in there and not being able to run the things that you don't see, you know, not being able to run the charities, not being able to run the organization and work with individuals across the Grand Lodge to be able to keep the body moving forward. And so, you know, a couple of different examples there of the value I think that progressive lines could offer, but a lot of times they don't. You know, a lot of times we, because we're so obsessed with that last position, you don't have this developmental process moving up the line as strong as we really should have it.
When we look at the code, you find out actually some really interesting things about how the progressive line works and where it defaults. And I think you and I were looking at our code, we figured out that if something happened to the Grandmaster and the Deputy Grandmaster, then the Grand Lodge defaults to elect the Worshipful Master of the oldest lodge in the jurisdiction, right? Like, it doesn't go to the
Yikes.
Grand Senior Warden. It doesn't go to the Grand
Right.
It just defaults to whoever the Master of Quincy Lodge is, or,
yeah,
you know, whatever that lodge is. And wow, what if it's just like some 22-year-old kid?
Imagine the scenario, some of the scenarios that we see. 22-year-old kid. Imagine another scenario where you get this guy, well, you know, we like him and he's always here and he's super active. He can't do the memory work, but he definitely deserves to be recognized as a past master among our lodge. So let's put him in the East, and then, you know, we'll help him out through the year. Imagine that scenario.
Yeah, super scary, especially when we're considering these are, okay, not mincing around, these are million-dollar charities that
Hundreds of million dollars.
Yep. Yeah. They spit on, you know, they're on the board for these things.
Yep.
So something else I wanted to, I'm just going to read this one part because I think I want to have you disassemble this a little bit. You say, we're talking about an attitude here. You say, it's precisely this attitude that I posit is the larger problem with the progressive line. That is the assumption that I won't offer any value until I'm the top leader. You might say, sure, you offer plenty of value. You should be volunteering and supporting the master's plan. This is derivative of the same problem of focusing only on your chance to quote-unquote run the show. In my experience, this often means silently following along so you don't get removed. That's something we should talk about too. But this is certainly not productive and may not be Masonic. Imagine if a business believed that only the C-suite executive, CEO, so the chief executive officer, chief financial officer, etc., were positioned to speak up and affect change. In the progressive system, neither the superiors nor inferiors are encouraged to learn and grow. The organization fails to establish recognizable continuity. So when we talk about continuity, this is like a vision that is established and that we're all working toward in a line. Every single officer knows what the vision is, and they say, we wanted whatever we're going to do, it's got to fit that vision. But instead, what we offer in most jurisdictions, Illinois has a little bit of favor because we have a 2-year line, but in most jurisdictions, they get 1 year and they're done. They go in and they throw everything they can at it, make their mark, whether it fits the vision or not. And so this is a problem. But tell me a little bit about this paragraph where you're writing this. Let's start with this idea that you might not have anything to offer until you're at the top. Do you think that people think this? When I read this, I thought, wow, that's crazy. Like, when I was moving through the line at, you know, my mother lodge, did people think that I had nothing to offer until I hit that spot? Or was it just like, whatever, that's just RJ, he's paying his dues till he gets to that spot?
No, I actually think this is probably an internal voice. In that, like, okay, I'm in as the senior deacon. I just got to do a good job with the senior deacon's ritual and not offend the three guys in front of me. And the way I guess I'm concerned that manifests is that we, and you're going to quickly see where this links down in later sentences, but where the way this manifests is not pushing or not challenging the ideas or the approach of various officers in front of you. And that's kind of what I mean by this might not be Masonic, right? Like, if in our degrees we're told to how to approach an erring brother and how to talk to him, that basically assumes that your brothers are going to err, which seems fair. And tells you that you have a responsibility to challenge them and to push them and to gently offer wise counsel. But I don't know how often that happens. It's certainly in a lot of the lines that I've been in. was not really welcome, right? You know, we could push, but people really didn't like the ideas as we pushed. And, you know, it is a two-way street then.
So thinking about this, right, when Grandmaster comes in and he says, I'm just going to use a stupid example. Grandmaster gets up and he says, we're going to do a one-day festival, and listen, it's going to be really diminished. We're going to take it down to the easiest level, something like at site, 300 guys or something. And here comes the deputy grandmaster up behind the grandmaster, and he says, oh man, Worsh, I don't know. This isn't a good idea. I don't think that this is traditional. I think it's an innovation, whatever his reasoning is. We've seen cases of this in the past where the grandmaster has essentially then just removed that death because he dared to say, maybe that's not the best thing. We definitely have this issue. And you talked about some of the things like in the corporate space where this kind of one idea runs the show each year is never going to happen. But there are these ideologies that exist within the corporate space that say no retaliation clause. And it seems we kind of don't have that in masonry sometimes. So something that you wrote in this one paragraph was fear of being removed or whatever. I think that's a legit fear. I think there's so many things in this fraternity, not even just in the progressive line, but in the way we operate, that several of us think, I really should say something, but I'm not gonna.
Yep.
Because I want to reach the East.
Yeah, I think those are fair examples. And the one thing I would add on top is in a healthy corporate environment, which isn't true about many corporate environments, but in a healthy one, you would also be able to bring, when you speak up and tell your boss, hey, I don't think this is a great path to run down. Here's why. And if you bring data and more than just opinions, more than in this scenario, more than just saying, I think this is an innovation. I don't think this works. But if you brought examples and the data's out there, if you brought those examples and said, this is why I don't think this is going to work, because we've shown that when we bring large swaths of guys in, they don't really stick around. That's not really, I guess, the point of what we're talking about. But what I do want to say is that data is welcomed in the corporate sense. And I don't know that we rely on enough data within masonry. And I can only hope that in the future we're getting close to being able to have a lot more use of data than what we've done.
Looking at the last, well, kind of the mid portion of this paragraph, there's two things that you say later on. So first of all, I'll just say, you said, this is derivative of the same problem of focusing only on your chance to run the show. So we're like, the way I'm thinking about this is, I'm just going to follow the master, and I've got some kooky idea in my head of whatever I want to do when I hit the East, and I'm really not going to talk about it. I'm not going to tell anybody else about it. I'm just going to like unload it when I hit the East, which does seem like it would be an error in judgment on multiple different levels. But then later you say, as leaders, we should be looking for ways to prepare future leaders to build the vision we presently hold. Let's talk about the vision that we presently hold. Is it your experience that a lodge has a vision that they hold? Or do they look to the Grand Lodge and use the most vague terminology possible to pull from? Or, you know, what's your experience here? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, as I think about these strategic views within masonry, they just don't exist. You know, if you understand how business strategy is built, and that's not really my area of specific expertise, but I can at least follow along business strategy. We don't have that. And we've really struggled to build that. And I think we've sort of just existed, you know, we truly do everything the way it's always been done. And we don't stop and ask, is this what we really want? And I think going back to this idea of your mission and vision, you know, your mission of any organization, but especially the eminent bodies within masonry. And I don't believe that's just the Grand Lodge. I think there are other eminent bodies. Your mission is to save masonry. Your mission is to grow masonry. And as a result of growth, improve the world. That's what we're here to do. And so as you build out strategy, there's a million ways you can go about doing that. And there's a lot of valid approaches, but a lodge should probably fall into a groove of one of those approaches. You know, each individual lodge might choose their own approach, but they should have a specific approach that you tend to stay pretty close to. You know, and that might be doing really good degree work and making sure that you're setting up your members to be better people. But I think there are equally problematic grooves, equally problematic strategies that really aren't going to ladder back up, as we say. This is a business speak, ladder up to the main mission and vision or strategic operating plan of the organization. And so sometimes I think when we focus on some of the things that you and I aren't as crazy about, RJ, those things seem to fall a little bit further outside of a strategic vision. I would say like just randomly doing some of the charity things that get done, randomly doing pancake breakfasts. These things don't really ladder back up to the vision in a way that is meaningful, right? For a pancake breakfast to be valuable in growing the organization, you have to have significant PR behind that. The goal can't be, we need that to pay our electric bill. The goal has to be, this is our opportunity to get in front of the community. And so I think when you lack these concepts, these purpose statements, mission and vision, you know, a real solid understanding of what you're doing as an organization. And if you absolutely lack those things, if your leaders can't concisely state, you know, if they don't have that elevator pitch of here's what we do, then we're not going to achieve what we need to.
Well, I mean, we love keeping it vague, right? Let's just make good men better.
But we don't do that, you know, and that's not totally what this paper is about, but I think it is an area that I really think it's the real challenge here is that we're not doing that, is that we're in a progressive line. It would be a great opportunity for the people above me to say, here's what your job is. That's the first thing. The next thing I need to learn is here's what our job is. And then finally, here's how yours and our jobs are going to get us where we're going. And we just don't do that.
One of the things you close out in the paper with, and this is, I just hadn't thought about it very much. And maybe it's like kind of an apathetic attitude, or maybe it's the volunteer syndrome. I got to throw I'm not going to say who said it because people know this guy, but he said to me, it's a shame that so many people feel that we're a volunteer organization, which he put in quotes. He said, because by that, they feel that they don't have to do anything. And I said, I totally agree, right? But the thing is that with that mentality kind of comes along, this kind of apathetic thing creeps in. And I think it affects, or is at least tied to this, or maybe it's just part of the culture of masonry, is this almost unwillingness to do something unless it comes from the top. And you say in here, as subordinate officers, we should be engaging our leaders more. And when I read that, I thought, oh my God, as a deacon or whatever, in all of the bodies I've ever been a part of that I've gone through all of the chairs, I thought to myself, I mean, I brought project and ideas, but it wasn't exactly anything I guess I would have engaged my leadership on. I basically, you know, set down a plan and said, we could do this. And I said, okay, let's do it. Right. But like, I never got to really truly engage them as a subordinate officer to assist them in seeing different perspective on something or how we could develop something differently. Tell me a little bit more about this thought of engaging leadership when you're just the Tyler.
So I've had some very specific conversations with people that I'm building a closer friendship with and people that I hold in very high regard. So I want to make sure that as I'm sharing some of these stories, I don't have those people's permission to share this, but I want to make sure that it's clear that these are people I respect, and I only would engage someone that I respect, quite honestly. I'm not going up to someone who I just don't think is right for a position of leadership or whatever and say, hey, what's up with this? What's up with that? But, you know, in my current roles, I've gone up to leaders and said, so what is our plan here? What are we doing? And because no one's really asked them that before, they don't really know what to say. And that's like totally fair. That's kind of what I want to normalize and say, it's okay to not know because we've never really thought of it in that context or in this regard. But also I'm asking as a hint to say, we need to know. We need to have a better understanding of who's responsible for various activities and why it's set up like that, because there's a thoughtful purpose, because all of that, again, flows back into a larger vision. And I do fear that there aren't enough people that understand the existential reality that masonry is facing. You know, I don't think masonry is going to go away, but it's going to shrink and it's going to be a lot different. And it's going to be very hard to do or to enjoy some of the things that we enjoy. And so that's why I keep trying to frame it in the sense of we are here to save masonry. And if you're an organization that isn't doing that, that isn't figuring out what piece of that puzzle you fit, I think you're a distraction. And so that concerns me. But in my view, in my perspective, I think there are some very key organizations, and I think we have some brilliant leaders in those organizations who just aren't being asked to share their brilliance. And so that's where I'm coming from when I say, go and engage these people and say, what's the plan? Not what degrees are we going to do? Not when are we going to do degrees or how are we going to go get people? Those are tactics. Strategy is, what is our role and how can we save masonry in our sphere of the world? How can we strengthen the body that is masonry? And it's a lot more complex than I think the average guy understands. My hope is that in these conversations, those leaders kind of walk away and start to understand. I think it's a slow process, but I do think they need to start to understand it's about more than just showing up and going through the motions of a degree and making sure that we put on degrees on a regular cadence. It's about, you know, impacting the members in a way that they come back and they develop their value and truly making good men better.
I love it.
The other thing I would say is these leaders that I'm engaging, they're the same ones who have come to me and said, wow, I have just climbed the ladder in this organization for 5 to 10 years plus, and I'm now running the show and I'm realizing that I have less time to make any change and I have less control over the change that we want to make. And this is something that's that control element. Again, I touched on this in the paper that if you haven't been thinking about this all the way and trying to pitch ideas and trying to use your rhetoric to sell an idea and to work these ideas around the organization and to get these things to start to flow, then yeah, when you get to the end, it's going to be pretty hard. It's going to be too late because you need momentum on these ideas to get them to function. And so a lot of what I'm doing, both in masonry and my professional life, is figuring out when I go into the next meeting, what am I going to talk to those leaders about to make sure that they walk away and go, not only does he know what's going on, but I need to care more about the thing that he cares about.
Right. That's actually a key concept in army work, right? How to win friends and influence people.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've received some pushback on some of this, right? Because I've referred to it as like human hacking to a point, but it's like, there's a difference between nefarious purposes and actually giving it. And I think that's the thing that really drives us, those of us who are in this to quote unquote save masonry and to care about what a leader's vision is, what the organization's vision is, and to try to garnish this vision, try to garnish this project, bring everything you can to it. And also at the same time, there is something to letting them know that you get it. It's an affirmation on their part as much as it is on your own. So Scott, in the closing bit of your article, you also said something just a few moments ago that related it back to this closing line, which was, when you move into the past position, it's no longer your ship to steer. And I have to say that if you wait until you get there, you don't have enough time to do the thing. So you might as well take as much time as you need and work on these things moving forward from the get-go, right? From the time that you're actually in the line and not wait until you get all the way to the top. But let's pretend that you did do that. It isn't your ship to steer anymore, but I feel like there is a case that can be made for a cadre of professionals who have moved through the East, maybe have a ship to steer in a sort of influential kind of way. What are your thoughts about that?
So I always think there's room for mentorship. I think the individuals have to be open to it. And in the corporate setting, if you're not open to it, you get broken in and you're going to get told that, like, you've got to be open to growth, right? And so I think there's probably a way to create a culture that says, fine, you're here and you've got some great tools, but they're by no means fully built out or fully honed. We're going to work on these various aspects. And so I absolutely think there's a way to do that. But I meant that in the sense of, yeah, if you didn't do what you wanted to and you started when you're in that main position, you're not going to be able to control stuff without really being offensive to the guys that are running the show after you. So I think it's a lot more difficult. And I guess it is relevant to see this paper through the context of I've gone through the lines I went through the line in one lodge and I've ran our lodge, but I'm not really talking about craft lodges here. I'm talking about some of the other organizations that I'm, you know, involved with and choosing to be involved with now. You know, so again, this isn't a criticism. This is observations and of how those organizations are run. And it's a conversation that's born out of the need to strengthen the guiding light of those organizations. I don't know that in this question in particular, it doesn't quite make as much sense if you think about it in the sense of craft lodge. It makes a lot more sense if you think through the lens of one of the premier valleys in the Northern Masonic jurisdiction, right? You have a very active membership. You have a very active group of leaders and you have a large organization. Once you move out of that past position, that very large organization is looking to the next leader and the next group of leaders to direct, you know, just to steer the ship. And I think it gets a lot harder. You end up going back to doing, you know, more things behind the scenes that are like filling gaps that you saw along the way, but it's going to be really hard to implement. I think your opportunity in an organization with that much momentum and that much activity and size, it's going to be pretty hard as a past anything, I think, to continue to roll out a large strategic initiative. For using the examples of the corporate world, it would be akin to the CEO who's moved on to retirement and, you know, might carry a seat on the board, but has come back to say, nope, this is how I think you should continue to run the organization, you know, 2-3 years in the future. And that's not going to happen. They're going to get forced out of those, they're going to have their microphone taken away. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, they're getting kicked off of Twitter. Actually, nobody gets kicked off of Twitter anymore.
Yeah.
You just got to pay money. I think that's a great place that we can wrap this. Scott, I want to thank you for your time. Everybody out there who has read your work in the past, I know they really enjoy it. You have so much to offer in terms of your professional expertise, which I think is really undervalued within the fraternity as a whole. Anybody out there with, you know, professional expertise that they can bring to the lodge, whether that's, you know, you're a professional painter or you are a certified accountant, utilizing the talent that we have is important. And I want to thank you for doing that both in the past and as a potential person who is going to end up one day in some exalted seat within the fraternity. I have a lot of faith and I really look forward to what you do in the coming years and in how you're going to challenge and engage leadership along the way.
No, absolutely. And thank you for saying that. It's, I cherish kind of the position I'm in now. And, I encourage more people to be selective about the things they get involved in and the things that they get active in, make sure that I think is your ability to control your activity with and balance that against time with your family and making sure that you're not stretched too thin, but also making sure that you can deliver some awesome results into the future. And so, you know, be picky about the things that you do. Don't chase after the titles or don't just go for a particular organization unless you feel like, you know, you have the passion and the skill set to take that organization in a direction that you think it needs to go. And as I've said time and again, you know, I stepped back from a lot of things within masonry to make sure I could focus on my schoolwork and my family responsibilities. But as I've come back into it, I really I've been very selective and only gone after things that are with other leaders who I trust and who I believe need that extra kind of propulsion into the future, but also something that I can be passionate about. The things that I'm currently involved with are much less public than I think the stuff I was involved with in the past, but I do absolutely believe that these are the things that are the future and are going to protect the future of our organization. So I appreciate you, you know, having me on the show. It's always good to catch up and to chat about some of our thoughts here. So thanks a lot.
Thank you. And your passion always shows through, brother. Thanks.
All right. My thanks once again goes out to worshipful brother Scott S. Duball for his awesome insights and all that he does for Freemasonry, constantly inspiring so many of us in the quarries. Now I'd like to remind everybody out there about a couple events that are happening. First, in April 15th at the Valley of Danville, we are having an Illinois Lodge of Research half-day education symposium. Half-day, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Brother Darren Lehners, Brother Greg Knott, and myself will all be there doing a presentation. We've got a historic building that we're going to be in, which is the Valley of Danville Scottish Rite Cathedral, and the cathedral has decided to open up for tours. It's going to be an epic day, a lot of fun, great fellowship, and how much does it cost? How about free 90 free? If you'd like to learn more, head on over to IllinoisLodgeOfResearch.org. We are asking that you register to attend, so we hope to see you there. Later this year, September 16th, is going to be MasonicCon Chicago 2023. This year, we've got 7 speakers, one day, and it will only be live and in person. An intimate exchange of ideas, conversations, networking, all frills, no fluff. 7 speakers, a full day of Masonic education, vendors, supporters, free, abundant parking, just steps away from the lodge. So if you joined us in 2019, consider coming back for 2023. If you want to learn more about MasonicCon Chicago 2023, head on over to MasonicConChicago.com and check out the website. One more time, I want to thank our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners for everything and allowing me to continue to make this show happen every single week. I appreciate all of you. Thanks once more for joining us. Until next week, stay on the level for Whence Came You. I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.
My dad's it. Here's your